Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne. I'm a comedian, writer, and one half of the Scummy Mummies. And today, listener, I am very excited. I have, in real life, Juno Dawson in the house. Hello, Juno.
Hello.
Oh, now I've been following Juno for a few years now, and I'm so thrilled you're here in person.
I'm here. It's so weird. I love meeting people off the internet in real life. It's like people, it's like the girl from The Ring.
Yeah.
It's like people crawling out of a screen, and it's never not unsettling.
No.
Yeah.
And it's really lovely. It's like, and also we've sort of got a couple of mutual friends. So mm-hmm. I was like, I already know she's fabulous because not just because I love you and what you do and what you've done, but I know that we have the wonderful Jo Elvin, who mm-hmm. I adore, and also Sarah Lee Donlan.
Yeah.
So it's really lovely. And I was like, but anyway, I'm waffling. I'm just blowing smoke up her delicious ass.
I was at the gym yesterday with a personal trainer, so it should be looking delicious.
It's absolutely fabulous. And can I just say, she's wearing a Spice Girls t-shirt mm-hmm. because that's where you're going tonight.
It is, yeah. After 10 years, we're back. I've been on every one of their tours.
Obviously, the first question you ask for a Spice Girl fan, who are you? Who's your...
Posh, always posh.
Yeah.
I used to... Well, I was the quiet, weird one. And I think... And this is why then later I stand Nicola from Girls Aloud as well, because... You know, I will always vouch for the quiet, weird one who stands at the back and doesn't really sing very much. Always the best one.
Now, I know, were you in a band?
I was, with Sarah Lee.
That's
right.
That's
the connection.
I've done a bit of digging. I've done a bit of personal digging. You tell me what the band was about?
Yeah, so it started out, honestly, as a reaction to the fact that our boyfriends at the time were all in very, very serious kind of indie garage bands. Mm. And sort of like the Wags, the indie band wives and girlfriends, we were like, you know, we should form a joke band. And it became, we conjured the title one day in the Pavilion Gardens in Brighton, and it was called Cherry Filth and the Death Legs. Well,
this needs to be a thing.
Well, it was, and that's the strange thing. So from a joke,
yeah,
Kerry started, who was another band member, she started saying, well, you know, I can play the bass and Fiona can play keyboards. You and Sarah can kind of sing. Why don't we do this? And so we started writing songs. And of course, as is the way with these things, Cherry Filth outlasted all of the terribly serious indie bands because we kind of got a bit of a name for ourselves on like the student gig circuit.
Yeah.
Because the songs, they were always very, very tongue-in-cheek. And we are talking about doing a comeback. We're all back in Brighton. And so, of course, now we would be Cherry Milf.
Yes.
Because we're all well into our 30s. So possibly, yeah, a Cherry Milf reunion.
Excellent. And what style of music were you playing?
It was kind of chaotic electro clash. It was around sort of 2004, 2005. So it was kind of very sort of Scissor Sisters-y,
kind of
Gravy Train, sort of Ladytron. But it was chaos. I mean, our big hit was called Poo Lips, which I think... based on an experience I'd had on a dating profile with a man who wanted to eat my poop. And so, yeah, so that was the level we were operating at. I'm not sure we were going to win an Ivan Avello. Look at it that way.
Okay. All right. Well, we might talk about that later on. Not eating poo.
Shouldn't do that.
No, don't
it
do that.
It can't be good for you. No judgment, but no, it can't be good for you.
There are other things to put in your mouth. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And that's not on top of my list. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, Juno. Who the fuck are you? What have you done? You've done amazing things. You're an award-winning author. Mm-hmm. and podcaster now.
Yes.
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. And a columnist. And that's actually how I discovered you, with your fabulous glamour column.
Oh, I miss glamour.
I love Joe Elvin. Was Rob Man. That was my favourite magazine forever and ever and ever.
Never took itself too seriously.
R.I.P. Glamour.
Sense of humour.
Bring it back. Bring it back. You were also and you can correct me, is LGBTQ plus champion. That's right. And you have been a spokesperson for Stonewall for schools and things like that, but just more generally.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of when you are a trans person in 2019 working in the media, by default, you get labelled as, oh, it's trans activist Juno Dawson. But I don't really do a lot. I mean, sometimes I will. I do still, through Stonewall, I go into schools and talk to kids. But that they're very clear about my role, which is I just sort of go into schools and just sort of talk about myself and my career.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes there have been times in the past where I've been drawn into sort of televised debates on news programs and things. But I've not really done any of that for about a year and a half, 2 years now, because I realized it was probably a more powerful message to just kind of do my job.
Yeah.
Rarely sometimes, if you are from a minority group, rarely actually are you just allowed to do your job. You know, you're called upon to talk about being a black woman or a disabled woman or a trans woman or a lesbian. And actually, sometimes I think it's far more powerful to just be a very successful lesbian or a very successful trans woman or a very successful black woman, because that's the activism in itself, kind of.
Yeah.
So my activism is incredibly lazy because I pretty much just do my job and walk my dog.
Yeah. This is a podcast about body. So I like to ask our guests, how do you feel about your body now? How are you feeling today?
A bit warm, but that's true of this building.
It is.
It's
like a mild sauna.
Yes. It's funny. It's, you know, like any woman, you have good days and bad days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a lot to do with getting older as well.
Yeah.
I think there were broadly sort of two or three spikes in my life where my relationship with my body had become quite combative, I guess is the right word.
Yeah.
Now is not one of them.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's because I'm busy. Maybe it's because I'm happy. You know, my life is very settled at the moment. Great job, great boyfriend, just bought a house. Everything's very settled. And I think that's reflected in the relationship I have with my body.
Yeah.
And as well, like just yesterday, I was with my personal trainer and taking on Fern, hello Fern if you're listening, taking on Fern felt like a positive step.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have a mortgage advisor for my mortgage. I have a therapist for my head. What if I employ someone to take care of my body?
Yeah.
And that felt like taking control of something.
Mm.
And seeing Fern once a week, it feels like I'm on top of it.
Yeah.
So I don't need to worry.
Yeah.
And I'll almost let Fern worry.
Do you know what?
It's her job kind of to worry about my body. And I had things. So I've got two big holidays this year. I've done one of them. I've just got back from Thailand. And then in about a month, we're going to Cyprus. And there is, of course, nothing scarier than the thought of beach wear and swimwear, especially for trans women when you've got a slightly weird relationship with your body anyway. And this was my first beach holiday post-transition. So I hadn't been on holiday since 2013.
Wow, that's huge.
Well, yeah, and a lot of that is tied into the transition. Like, I didn't look like this in the early days of my transition. And so it was kind of, beach holidays just felt like an absolute no-go. So I took like city breaks and went to nice museums and stuff.
Mm.
But beaches were absolutely not. And pre-Thailand was, I would say, one of those spikes.
Yeah.
Where I was not in a good place. And the run-up to that holiday is why I hired Fern.
Yeah.
Because I was like, look. And it's, and what's lovely about this is I'm sure all your guests have said the same thing, which is you're so able as an individual to sort of, I think, compartmentalize and know which bits of your body you're less happy with. Mm. And I think that's important to almost start with the good bits.
Yeah.
So like, these are the bits I like, but these are the areas that I would like to improve. And I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to the book, but it's kind of like my days of wanting to be a 16-year-old supermodel, it's not the one, and not what I want to be. I know.
So you're at peace with that now?
I'm at peace with I'm not going to be.
And you look at, you look sensational.
Thank you. But but I'm, my shoulders are always going to be broader than average because, again, trans, and my shoulders did go through the wrong puberty. There's nothing we can do about that. Mm. And my sort of shoulder to hip ratio is going to be off.
Yeah.
And so what I said to Fern is I was like, well, here's what I would like to do. So I want a bigger bum and a smaller waist, because that's the way that I can slightly – it's not about being skinnier. Mm. It's about changing the proportion, proportionizing, as one of the RuPaul Drag Race queens would no doubt say. And so that's what Fern does. So we never talk about weight loss.
No.
We never talk about food. It really is just about I want – a bigger butt, or, you know, because I will be quite honest, I had no butt.
No, like,
I was
mine's
completely flat ass. So it really was just about it. So it's all squats, all lunges. And sure enough, I have now got a bit of a bum.
You felt the burn, and now,
I can feel it now. I can barely sit down. I'm in actual physical pain. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
It? So.
And it's funny you should mention beach, because I think beach is, it feels like the scariest place for most people who have hang-ups about their body. And we all do. Fuck it. We all do. 100% of us do. And it's that thing. And I think we are the biggest critics when it comes to, because you get out in a bikini on the beach, no one fucking cares.
No.
Because they're all having their own their own mental issues about how they look and all that sort of stuff. And it was such a revelation a couple of years ago. It was 2 years ago I went to Italy and I went, I'm just going to buy a bikini. And to see what happens, nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. And it's so weird. And we do have these huge discussions in our head about, oh, my God, and if I do this and everyone will laugh at me and oh, God, and I'll have to cover up and what sort of kimono will I have to wear and all that sort of stuff.
Moo-moo, like,
yes, a massive tent. And it's so funny and it's so ingrained in us. I wouldn't say from kids, because there's that lovely freedom you have as a child of you running around in the nude.
Just naked, free as a bird.
Oh, it's lovely. But then, yeah, you hit about sort of 10, and I was seeing that with my own daughter. She's like, oh, mummy, am I chubby? Or, you know, is this meant to feel like this? I'm like, yes, it is meant to. That's your lovely body. But, yeah, all the influences around. So, I mean, when you were growing up, when did you start having, I guess, body awareness?
The horror.
Yeah.
I mean, body dysmorphia for trans people, I mean, the struggle is real.
Mm.
So what I know is that by the time year 9 camp came round, so I would have been 13.
Yeah.
The dysmorphia was well underway. And actually, I had to be sent home from camp because the notion of communal showers was so terrifying.
Mm.
I had an anxious breakdown and I had a panic attack so serious they sent me home.
Oh, darling.
But that was the first thing I remember. So that didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So presumably the anxiety had already started before that because there's no way it came out of nowhere on that camp.
That was like the real trigger.
Because
that's really confronting.
Mm. And that was the first major panic attack I think I ever really had. So I would have been about 13. Mm. So I know that it was already there. And a general sense that my body didn't look right and that it certainly didn't look or feel like a boy's body.
Mm.
And I could sort of perceive sort of boys around me and sort of think, well, I don't sort of really look like that. And I knew I didn't look like a girl either.
Mm.
And, you know, the sense of shame and the sense of ridicule that I felt I would receive just meant it was a complete disengagement. And, you know, this hilarious idea that, you know, trans women are trying to find a way into sport. No, because that was not the one. I pretended to have a bad back for about 6 years. I didn't do PE through all of high school.
Yeah.
I had a fictional bad back, which my poor parents spent an awful lot of money trying to fix.
Oh, darling.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of.
It's PE has come up again and again on this podcast. We had the wonderful Sophie Hagen on the podcast, mm-hmm. and she's the best. And she was shamed when she was 8 years old. The PE teacher said, "You all have to have a shower. You ought to get nude." She's like, "No, I don't want to." And she said, "We all have to wait until Sophie has a shower." Like the shame that PE teachers have inflicted. Not all PE teachers, just quite a few.
It hasn't changed, actually. Yeah. I don't think in particular.
Because you do a lot of work with, obviously, adolescents, yep. and a lot of your books are being targeted. Targeted? That's not right. You've written young adult fiction. Yeah.
I mean, sort of the YA reader starts from about 12 and doesn't stop.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I now certainly, I mean, PE reform is certainly something that I've talked a lot about and talked about in the gender games as well, that it's just trying to make young people get naked at the most critical point in their identity development, not the one.
Yeah.
And I think this, you know, especially LGBTQ kids, you're going through enough. Don't make them strip in public, you know. And I've never been to a gym or a communal changing room where as adults we're expected to do this, as adults we're afforded as much privacy as we want.
Yeah.
Why aren't we affording that same privacy to adolescents who are already having a really difficult time?
Oh, it's horrific.
Give them a cubicle. Build schools with cubicles.
Yeah, exactly.
How hard can it be?
Absolutely. I just remember, and I have mentioned this story on the podcast before, when I was 12, we had swimming and I was the first one to get pubic hair. And, you know, for me that was horrific. I remember shaving it off and getting horrible shaving rash and all that stuff. But I had a bit of a bush, and I just remember all the kids going, "Oh my God, Helen's got pubic hair," and like, and then they just kept talking about it for weeks, and I was like, and I felt such shame, which was a perfectly normal thing to have hair on your body. Apparently, we're not meant to. So I just think, you know, that could have been avoided. They're like, "Oh, you're all bodies, it's all fine," but no, you're allowed to feel private about that sort of thing.
I'll just scrap PE.
Yeah, fuck it.
No, actually, do you know, the funny thing is, because then when I swear briefly was, I did 5 years as a PE teacher, and I used to, not PE teacher, sorry, just a primary school teacher. I used to love teaching PE, but I was very aware that I wanted to make it as fun as possible. And if kids wanted to go off and get changed in a toilet, I just let them.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mean, granted, they were like, what, 10? But just, it was, yes, super, super good fun.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think, gets the issue of showers. Like, do we need to be shower? I don't shower at the gym because I live like 30 seconds from my gym, so I just go home and shower there, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, I mean, no child is sweating that much during PE that they wouldn't need. I mean, the effort that most teenagers put into PE as well, I think barely breaking a sweat. So
that's right. And I think, just learning to love your body and movement and that kind of exercise. Yeah. We were never, it was all about competitiveness and who could run the fastest and all that sort of thing.
And the other thing as well that I think would change PE for a generation, let them choose their activity.
Fantastic.
If I'd been allowed, as a teenager, had I been allowed to do badminton, netball, gymnastics, dance and athletics, I wouldn't have needed to have that conversation.
Yeah.
It was the fact that they put me, a gender non-conforming, 8-stone child, on a rugby pitch.
Yes.
Left both physical and mental scars, frankly. Yeah. So.
And did you go to an all-boys school?
No, thank God.
All right.
So I don't think I would have survived. I think I would have probably tried to kill myself.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So thank God.
No, that's there was an outlet. Now, I want to get back to your glamour column, because that's how I discovered you. And so was it over 18 months that you...
I think I did 22. So it's about 2 years.
Yeah. So you sort of tracked your transition through your monthly column, which was fabulous.
Thank you.
And what a great opportunity for you, but for also the readers to go through that journey with you. Obviously, not the physical side of things, but can you tell us about why you decided to do the column?
I mean, it came about quite organically. I was in Dawn O'Porter's pop-up shop off of Carnaby Street, and she was like, "You should write about this." And I was like, "I probably will." And she was like, "I'm going to give you Joe Elvin's email." And so it was all down to Dawn, and because Dawn was already writing for Glamour. And then I went to meet Joe Elvin, and we sort of talked about what we would do. Joe Elvin was so great. And what I loved about Jo is that she wasn't scared to say, I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
But she was so receptive and so willing to learn. But what was interesting now, when I look back at those columns, is I didn't know what I was talking about either. And I think it really shows. But there is something about the naivety of it that I think works. So at the time, I thought I was such an expert on what was happening to me and what was going to happen to my life. But what was interesting about those columns is that it was a complete eye of the storm moment. My life was in complete upheaval. My body was changing. My life was changing. The transphobia and the scrutiny you get is at its worst at the beginning of your transition, because you look sort of quite different, and you know, you're trying to signal to the world that you're a woman, but you kind of still look like sort of like you're somewhere in between genders. You know, I was, you know, at the time I had bright red hair and loads of makeup, wearing women's clothes, but my body hadn't massively changed because I hadn't started on hormone treatment. And so, you know, you are targeted way more for ridicule and way more for sort of transphobic abuse in public. And my life was really difficult for those 2 years. And so I think on one hand, I look back at some of the things I said and I cringe. But on the other hand, I'm like, Jo got me at a really interesting and crucial moment in my life. If you were to say now, you know, would you recommend that a trans person in the first 2 years of their transition made that process public?
Yeah.
I would say no. Like, self-care,
yeah.
Protect yourself.
Yeah.
This is not a time in your life where you need to be even more vulnerable. But as a snapshot of a woman at a really difficult time in her life, yeah, and I think it captures that. And I think sometimes you can... I didn't realise how vulnerable I was, but I think it shines through.
Yeah.
A couple of them were quite raw.
Yeah, and there's a nice reflective, the last of your columns are quite reflective about what you learnt and who helped you through.
Yeah.
And can you describe for the listener, like, so the process, how long has that process taken? Like, when, because you spoke in the column about you were gay and then realised that that's not really who you were.
Yeah. So I think it's funny because there's obviously so much conversation about trans children.
Yeah.
But here's the twist. Any trans adult was a trans child.
Right. There you go.
It's just that we just hadn't started our transition yet.
Right.
So I think I was born trans. It was always going to happen. You know, the earliest memories I have are asking my mum when I was going to become a girl. And as a child, I very vividly imagined the woman I was going to become. You know, I never pictured myself growing into a man. And for me, that's always, you know, the interesting thing. I suspect if you were to capture a trans child at any age and say, draw a picture of yourself as an adult, they would draw the right kind of adult.
Okay.
And that was true of me, you know, even into my teens. You know, when I went through my 90s craft phase, I thought, right, if I became a powerful witch, I would be able to do that thing that she does in the film where I kind of conjured myself into a woman.
Yeah.
Kind of. There's a reason all trans people really love The Craft and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'll just put that one out there. And so it was a funny one, really, which is, I see transition, it wasn't a process of changing who I was. It was a process of becoming who I was.
Yeah.
So I think it is a process of becoming, not change.
Yeah.
And so everything that I was before 2014 wasn't really me. And, you know, I went through lots of iterations. My goth phase, you know, I knew I liked boys.
Yeah.
So I figured, well, I guess I must be gay. And like a really key turning point for me was in about 2013, where I was sat with a bunch of gay men having brunch. It's quite typical, isn't it? Quite stereotypical. A bunch of white gay men.
I can't imagine it.
A bunch of white gay men having brunch. And all of a sudden, I was just so hungover and I was despairing and I was talking about my gender. And I just said, but God, didn't we all want to be women when we were kids? And this table of gay men were like, no.
Right.
No, we have always known we were men.
Yeah.
We love being men and we also love men. And I was like, oh, shit. And that was such a eureka moment of kind of that fundamental difference between a gay man, fundamentally a man who likes men, and a trans heterosexual woman,
yeah.
a woman who likes men.
Yeah.
So it was just, that was a real moment. And so that was kind of the real turning point. So I don't regret my 20s. I do wish I'd started my transition sooner so I could have just had more of my life.
Yeah.
But actually, my 20s were kind of a blast. So I can't really complain too much. And as well, you know, often this way, so people who've known me since childhood, they're surprised at how little I've actually changed.
Yeah.
It's just that now they're kind of getting me at my best. They're seeing a happier, freer version of the person they've always known.
Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's like Pokemon. If you're a fan of Pokemon,
you
know that we all have our final form.
Yeah.
And this was my final form.
Yes.
Fully evolved.
Yes, you just needed all the bits in place.
Exactly, yeah. And and the bit that the glamour column captured was the, I guess it was just an outward transformation where the outsides started to match what was on the inside.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the bit that's very public. It's very visible.
Yeah.
And so that's the bit that sometimes people can latch onto.
Mm.
But, you know, this is it now. You know, it's kind of the twist has played out, you know, kind of. And then you just become quite boring.
Yeah.
And your life is just like any other woman's, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things, and you write so well about it. It's like, it's not like you decide, you go to the clinic, it's changed, you're done in a week. It's such a long, it's such a long process for you.
Lifelong.
Yeah.
But now, this again, it sounds like I'm being trite, or it sounds like I'm being a bit woolly, but I always sort of, I lean in and say, who among us isn't going through change?
Yeah.
And it's like, again, sort of like mind blown.
Yeah.
You know, we're all getting older. You know, women in particular, I think women go through much more noticeable transitions through their life, whether it's starting to menstruate, whether or not to become a mother. Because, you know, people don't scrutinise men becoming fathers in the
Fuck
way that
no.
women are scrutinised.
Yeah.
And then, of course, menopause is a huge transition that women will go through. So I think that all of us change as we get older. Women, I think, change arguably a little bit more than men, and trans women, quite a noticeable and fundamental change.
Yeah.
And that's true of trans men as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, transition is a very personal thing. You know, not all trans people go through surgeries, you know.
Yeah.
But if you are transitioning, yes, your body is going through an enormous change. And, of course, the medication I take is HRT. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I'm on the same medication that lots of other menopausal women are on as well. So
yeah.
it's all the same stuff.
And what does the HRT do for you then? Just because I don't know. I will probably be on it, you know, tomorrow. I'm a woman in my 40s.
I mean, HRT, so it was, I didn't get the sort of, the very dramatic changes that can happen. They start you off an incredibly low dose.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's a mistake to start pounding 10 milligrams of estrogen a day because you go mad.
Yes.
The mood swings are so out there. But there was a period where all of a sudden I realised, Juno, why are you crying at this picture of a dog?
Right.
You've never cried at the picture of a dog. And so a lot of the symptoms that I started to get in the early days of HRT were what a lot of women would prescribe as premenstrual.
Yeah.
And because, of course, you're flooding your body with estrogen.
Yeah.
And at the same time also, so I do take another medication as well, which blocks off all the testosterone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which means that possibly, you know, it lowers your sex drive, mm-hmm. perhaps less anger, less frustration, less aggression. So
I need that for my husband.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we know where sex drive comes from. Yeah. If you are a horny person, it's because of testosterone in your body.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true of men and women, yeah. and cis women and cis men and trans women and trans men.
Mm.
It's all testosterone and androgen. So I block off my testosterone and I take some additional estrogen, and that has basically told my body, oh, this is more in line with the majority of women.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there are cisgender women who have more testosterone than some cisgender men, which is yeah. how we've got people like Caster Semenya, and why there's a lot of fuss about Caster Semenya, who is in every way, shape and form a biological woman, mm-hmm. but she just so happens to be a woman with loads of testosterone in her body because that's the way nature designed her, kind
yeah.
of. That's a whole other conversation, isn't it? But, the estrogen over... So I've been on the estrogen for about 4 years now. It's what's given me some nice boobs. Thank you, estrogen. Because I must admit, I didn't want a boob job. I would yeah. never criticize a woman who did have a boob job. But on a personal level, I didn't like the idea of having something put in.
Yeah.
Like...
And does that mean you got... Do you have nipple sensation still? Because that's one of the things yeah. about getting a boob job. You lose your... We're both grabbing our tits.
The weird thing is, almost, it's a bit like, you know, the magic porridge pot. I'm slightly yeah. stop, little pot, stop. Because
yeah.
they're still growing.
Oh.
And this has been a bit strange. And even the doctors who I see at the gender clinic are a bit like, by now they should have stopped. They shouldn't still be growing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was a cup. Cool.
Yeah.
B cup, great. Because I'm quite slender. So I was like, cool.
That's all in proportion.
Kept
yeah.
going into C cup. And I'm like, if I'm going to start to look, because again, as pointed out, I don't have much of an ass.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start to look a bit top heavy. So yeah. I'm a bit kind of like, Stop, little pop.
Oh, yeah, if you do more, because one of the things when I started doing gym work is your boobs start shrinking. So it sounds like Fern's going to sort it all out.
Yeah. So I think. And it's funny, I'm now the same bra size as my mum. So it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Let's maybe there is something biological in that. I don't know. But that was cool because, you know, I have had bits of surgeries and, you know, having been through, three or four general anaesthetics now, I'm just kind of like, do you know, it really takes out of you and recovery.
Fucked.
Months of recovery. So I was like, do you know what? If you don't have to get a boob job, just don't.
Yeah.
And
Grow your own,
yeah.
Locally sourced.
Exactly. Organic.
That's
but
it.
Again, that's absolutely no judgment on any woman
who
would seek to have a breast enlargement. I mean, it's your body.
Oh, absolutely. God, there's some good... A few of my friends have had them and they are spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot keep my eyes off their tits. They are what my boobs will never be or never were. I think they've always been sort of big. And I was one of those kids who just went from naught to big. That was...
Although, do you follow Michelle Visage on social media?
Yeah.
So she's just had implants out and she's talking a lot about... She believes, and I think a lot of women believe, that her implants made her sick.
Really?
Yeah.
So she's a really strict vegan and she's really... Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder.
So she had implants a very long time ago and she is convinced, and there's some research to back it up, that her implants were making her poorly.
Oh, God.
So it's something worth reading about.
Yes.
And I would like to learn more about it.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. Now, sitting in front of me, Juno, is your new book.
Hi, Meat Market.
And now, yes, Meat Market is fabulous. It's an absolutely unputdownable book.
Thank you.
I was reading it, in fact, yesterday, and it is fantastic. Now, I could bang on about it, but I won't do it as well as you. So can you tell the listeners about your fabulous new book, which really covers a lot of what we've been talking about so far?
So it's about a girl called Yana. She is a girl from Southwest London, and on the first page of the book, she is scouted by a modelling agency when she's at Thorpe Park theme park. And initially, given that she comes from a family who are struggling a little bit financially, she decides this could be her golden ticket. Mm-hmm. And that this is an opportunity for a 16-year-old girl to make a lot of money very quickly. And off she goes. But very gradually, bit by bit, she starts to realise there are people in the fashion industry who are seeking to exploit girls like Yana. And then about halfway through the book, something terrible happens to Yana. She is assaulted, I think it's fair to say. And she has to decide whether or not to speak out. And it's very much about that turning point in the book.
Mm. It is definitely a page turner. And this follows up. So your book before this one was called Clean, which mm-hmm. was loved universally. And what was it? It was the winner of Cosmopolitan's Big Book Must Reads Award as well.
Yeah. I mean,
nice.
Thank God for Clean. Clean has opened a lot of doors for me. It did really well. And we weren't expecting it to be like the beach read of 2018, but it did so well. Thank you, Cosmopolitan. Their support really took it into a different league. So Meat Market is the follow-up. It's set in the same world as Clean, but it's not a sequel. It's completely new characters and a completely new story. But I lived in London for a long time and I wanted to tell stories about different sides of London. And through glamour and through a lot of friends I have, I got to look through some doors into the world of fashion.
Mm.
And I loved some of what I saw. I love clothes and I love dressing up, but I didn't like some of what I saw. And I think there's been an element of Stockholm syndrome.
Mm.
People consider themselves to be so lucky to work in fashion that they've become blind to the fact that a lot of these girls are being treated really badly.
Yeah, because there's some really alarming bits in the book where she sort of goes to the people in charge, like mm-hmm. her modelling agency, and said, look, this has happened. They're like, oh, that's just what he's like, you know. And but it is what it is. Is it assault? It was assault. And she's let down by the people who are meant to protect her. And it's such a great book, and I'd love when my daughter's just slightly older to read it.
I mean, I do. I would never ever slag off any other YA writers, but it's a frustration with the industry in the UK that they do see as slightly as being children's books plus, like with a follow-on milk to children's books.
Yeah.
And that's not how I regarded teen fiction. I grew up on Judy Blume.
Yeah.
It was tackling some really big, juicy things.
I was actually about to say, whenever I think Juicy Blume, it is Juicy Blume, isn't it?
It's Juicy Blume, yeah. But I liked Virginia Andrews and books like that. That's what I was reading when I was a teenager. You know, Flowers in the Attic deals with incest.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of wanted to take issues that real young women are dealing with. And both Clean and Meat Market take issues which they're not pretty, they're not nice, they're not necessarily politically correct, they're not necessarily child-friendly, they're certainly not PG-13.
Yeah.
But they are absolutely what 13-year-olds are talking about, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, and some of the other great themes in the book is about friendship and knowing who your friends are, and that's really important. And her boyfriend as well. And
oh,
I
love Ferdy.
Oh, Ferdy's lovely.
He's one of my favourite characters I think I've ever created.
Yeah, he's so solid and loving and devoted. And also, I love. There's a scene in the book where Yana goes back to school and she's just sort of made it as a model, and then she hears the girls bitching about her in the toilet. and it was it L'Oreal?
Laurel.
Laurel.
Traitorous Laurel.
Laurel slags her off. And I was like, oh, you cow. You've got to be beside your friend. And the jealousy and all that sort of bitterness. But that's real life. And I'm seeing that now with my daughters in year five and all the jealousy and all the nastiest things that will come out of girls' mouths and boys. I think young women will really love it. I love the book so much as well. well.
Thank you.
So brilliant. And so what's next after Meat Market? Are you writing your next
I'm still writing Meat Market because it's in adaptation. So lovely people at Unstoppable TV, so that's Noel Clark and Jason Matz's production company, they bought the rights before I'd finished the book, to be honest. They were very on it. And they have asked me to adapt it. So we are taking Yana and Ferdy and her friends and turning it into kind of a gritty teen drama, a bit like Sex Education. Obviously, there's been a lot of chat around skins, sex education. So fingers crossed that Meat Market will be coming to a streaming platform near you.
Excellent.
Soon.
I want this to happen. Now, I was mentioning friends as a theme in your book, but and we mentioned we have mutual friends. I have a message to read from Sarah Lee.
No way! Oh my gosh!
So this is a dear friend who was in the band, and she says, "Juno, how is it possible that we have been fully grown lady friends for at least 15 years when we are both practically teenagers? I am so proud of everything that you have achieved and your immense courage. You are ridiculously talented and I'm in awe of your determination and strength. I will always be there to make you post-operative fish finger sandwich. Poo lips forever. Kiss, kiss, kiss."
Yay! Oh, no, here's the tea. Sarah Lee made me fish finger sandwiches after my first nurse job, which went so badly, I then had to have another one.
Oh.
It is terrifying to think that Sarah Lee and I first met in 2003.
Wow.
Just, it's so long ago. Frightening times. But yeah, what I love about your girlfriends is you know that we're lifers now. We have a life sentence. I don't know. We don't know where life is going to take us. But I've, the girlfriends that I am my ride or dies now, we're talking 20, 25 year friendships.
It's incredible, isn't it?
And I don't think, we can't shift each other. I think we're in it for the long haul.
Oh, it's so lovely. We're going to some quick fire questions. Mm-hmm. Before we do, what would you like to plug? How do people follow you, Juno?
So I'm at Juno Dawson on everything. Mm-hmm. Well, actually just Twitter and Instagram. I guess that's the best place. And then depending on when this goes out, I'm going to be touring Meat Market. We're calling it the Meet and Greet. Can you see what we've done there?
See what you've done there.
Tour throughout July. So yes. People can catch me through July and August. I hope people enjoy Meat Market. So far, so good with the reviews.
It's brilliant. I really love it. And also you've got your other many other books, but This Book Is Gay.
Still going strong. Yep. This Book Is Gay has been out now for a long time, but that's a perennial.
Yeah.
And
evergreen.
An evergreen. Yes. Well, that's This Book Is Gay that has kept my career ticking over. Every once in a while I get like a check from America and, it's kind of just ticking on. There's an anthology out called Proud as well. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year I curated. And especially if out there, if there's any teachers listening, I would love, love, love teachers and librarians to get a copy of Proud for the school library, because I think it's so important for LGBTQ youth to sort of see those little signs that their school is a safe space.
Yeah.
And by seeing a copy of Proud or This Book Is Gay in a library and the very upfront books, they know that their school is supportive. And I think that's really important.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Juno, are you ready for a quick fire?
My body is ready.
Excellent. Okay, let's go. What makes you feel sexy?
I will say this. Lingerie, but nice lingerie. Am I allowed to plug a company?
You can say brands.
Playful Promises.
Playful Promises.
I love them. It's classy, but sexy. I love it.
You're wearing them right now. She's got a hint of pink. What's this one?
This is Autograph. It's the Rosie McWhatsup from Marks and Spencer.
Yeah, nice. Very nice. Excellent. Lingerie it is. What's your most favourite thing to put in your body?
Dick. What?
Hey!
No.
Cock!
You're allowed to
say dick!
Although, actually, that's a lie. So, for my boyfriend who is probably listening to this, of course, your penis. Actually, Haribo Starmix. I'm not even going to lie. The first answer was a lie.
Every day as opposed to sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like everyday food as opposed to sometimes food. What's your most embarrassing body moment?
Can I do a serious one?
Yes, you can.
We've not talked about I have really bad IBS.
Yes, so, let's talk poos.
So I've never actually shit myself, but I live in constant fear of the day when I might.
Yeah.
And I've actually had to kind of accept that IBS, a lot of people suffer from it, and it disproportionately affects women.
Yeah.
So, and it's never talked about. We never talk about things like this. And there's been, you know, there isn't a public toilet in London that I'm not familiar with. I know where they all are. I could
quick
put together
exit.
The definitive map.
You need your app. You need an IBS app, man.
Is there an IBS app?
No, we there should create should it. We should. Millionaires.
You're not allowed to do it now.
Yeah.
That's ours. It's copyrighted.
We've done it. And just, it's like an Uber.
Yeah.
But
I will say Liberty's in London. Go downstairs into the shoe department and they have a lovely toilet.
They have a gorgeous, yes.
Many a poop in Liberty's. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Love you, Liberty's. The Hall of Fat Fame. We like to herald wonderful women and men who lift us up. Who would you put in? Who inspires you the most?
I am going to go for Stephanie Yeboah.
Mm-hmm.
She's a tweeter and she is just so wonderful about being a plus-size woman of colour. She's fearless and I love her.
Excellent.
She's certainly, at the moment, she's inspiring me. So
excellent. Stephanie, you're in. And finally, Fatspiration. What is your mantra? What are the words that get you through?
No one is thinking about you as much as you are.
True.
And I think knowing that, the fact that no one else really gives a shit about you, I think is actually very powerful.
Yeah.
It enables you to live without ego, which I think is good.
Excellent. Juno, I don't want it to end, but it must.
Oh, thank you.
You are even more brilliant in real life than you are on the squares and in the written word. Do buy a copy of Meat Market. It's absolutely brilliant. And follow Juno on all the things.
Yay, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. All right. You've been listening to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. It's been hosted by me, Helen Thorne. The producer is Emma Corsham and the music is by John Thorne. Please rate, review and subscribe. You've been an amazing guest, Juno, and you've been an amazing listener. Thank you so much. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.